I'm going to give a short intro to the book. I'm going to be reading out of my little study Bible and the little intro that they got written down already. It says, the Book of Songs was a hymn book for the children of Israel for the early church. It is a book of poetry that was set to music. Unlike the rhyming poetry we're used to, Hebrew poetry involves the building of thoughts using repetition, contrast, restatement, and parallels. Written over hundreds of years by a variety of authors, the Psalms were collected into a book during the time of Ezra. We usually associate the Psalms with David, since he wrote most of them, at least 73. And there were other writers, including Moses, Solomon, the sons of Korah, Asaph, Heman, Ethan, and Hezekiah. 39 of the Psalms are considered orphanic because we don't know who wrote them. The Book of Psalms is divided into 5 sub-books. Book 1 contains Psalms 1 through 41. Book 2 contains Psalm 42 through 72. Book 3 contains Psalm 73 through 89. Book 4 contains Psalms 90 through 106. And Book 5 contains Psalms 107 through 150. We don't know the purpose of these divisions, but it probably had to do with the order of worship in the temple. All right, so here we have an intro to a very cool book. Like mentioned in the beginning, it was a hymn book. It was something that the people of Israel were well familiar with. It was something that they meditated on all the time. When they went into the temple, this is what they'd be singing to the Lord. And for us Christians today, these psalms carry a great weight inside of our lives. They definitely carry a great weight inside of my heart. For a while, I thought the psalms were kind of stupid. You know, I'm a very rational guy, and so I was like, man, that sing-songy kind of junk, I don't really like. I didn't really like worship music for a long time, but now, which Art probably doesn't like, or Bounce, or Amber, but I definitely didn't like it, because I'm more of a logical, rational kind of guy, so I was into books like Romans, and I was into books like that were very theologically deep, but over time, I realized that in order to have a strong Christian walk, you need to be rooted in the Psalms. Because what it does, what it is it's these strong believers in God going through struggles and trials and emotional distress, and they're being very real and relevant about their situation. You know, a lot of times we read things like Philippians 4, where it says, be anxious for nothing. And we're like, yeah, sounds easy, Paul. All right, and what we see in the Psalms is we see people that are struggling with their anxiety, and they're wrestling with it before God, and they're struggling with their depression, and they're struggling with, is God left me? They're struggling with their sinful nature, and they're like, man, what's going on? And they're wrestling with it before the Lord, and they pour out their hearts in these beautiful, wonderful pieces of literature that we get to read today. And so I hope that as you guys walk through your Christian life, and that's why I handed out that pamphlet for you guys, it has a lot of beautiful psalms that when you yourself are struggling with certain things, you can go to the Psalms and you can realize, man, I'm not weird. There are tons of people thousands of years ago who did the same stuff that I'm dealing with right now, who are struggling with the same stuff that I'm dealing with in this moment. You know, in the Psalms, I found some of the most heartbreaking, heart-wrenching statements that are within anything, the most doubting and cynical words that you're going to find, even from any atheist, you're going to find written in the Psalms. There's a whole section of Psalms called the imprecatory Psalms, which means the cursing Psalms. These are Psalms that are literally written about wanting to hurt people, which is cool. It's Psalms that are literally written like, God, why don't you pierce their liver with an arrow and just, man, smash them in the mouth. And like, I read it and I'm like, yeah. They knew what it feels like, man, to be angry with someone, to like hate someone that you want to love, but you can't find the way to do it. And so they wrestle with these things before the Lord. This is how a Christian is to grow. When you find your heart doing something that your spirit doesn't want to do, you should be rooted in the Psalms. You should be rooted in the Psalms, and you should be pouring your heart out just like these people did. And understanding their plight, and understanding how they did it, how they wrestled with God, and how they found victory in Him. So really, one of the major keys to the books of Psalms, and we're going to talk about this a lot tonight, is this concept of joy. It's this concept of joy being this rampart, this protection and fortress for us as Christians as we're walking through this life, as we're being attacked by different adversaries, as we're being attacked by Satan, as we're being attacked by friends and family and even foes, as we're being attacked by our own emotions, by our fears and our doubts, as we're being attacked by all these things. How do we surround ourselves with the joy in God that's going to carry us through, that's going to be that anchor for our soul through this storm? How are we going to find a way to rest in the Lord? And this is what the Psalms teach us how to do. Now, another beautiful thing about the Psalms, and I'm gonna quote from C.S. Lewis because the way he put it was just so amazing. This is a book, it's called Reflections on the Psalms. He wrote it a very long time ago. For those of you guys who don't know who C.S. Lewis is, he was a very, very famous Christian author. He was an intelligent man. He was one of the foremost minds in medieval literature. He became a Christian at the age of 30, and he began writing books like the Chronicles of Narnia. That was C.S. Lewis. These amazing epics about the Christian life. But then he wrote like some very deep theological books, like the one that I'm about to read to you guys right now. I'm going to read you a word from it. And the thing that we deal with as Christians, especially when we're getting assaults from the other, from the non-believers, and even from your own heart when you're dealing with a book like the Psalms, is they're going to be like, what's the deal with God telling us that when I'm struggling with something, I need to go to Him? And when I want to rejoice, I need to worship Him. Is he some like, and I think C.S. Lewis puts it this way, he says, like, is he like some old woman who just needs some compliments to keep her going? Is that what God's like? Is he some insecure old woman? Is that what's going on here? And a lot of people, including actors like Brad Pitt and Oprah and people like that, the reason why they left Christianity, the reason why they left the belief in this kind of God that's mentioned in the Bible is because they're like, I just couldn't accept the fact that God is constantly calling us to worship and glorify Him alone. I can't deal with that. And so C.S. Lewis, in order to answer that question of why does God write the longest book in the Bible about worshiping Him? Is that really right? Is it really correct for God to do that? Is He really looking out for my benefit? And this is what C.S. Lewis writes. And again, the book is called Reflections on the Psalms. And he said, I thought of it in terms of compliment, approval, or the giving of honor. I have never noticed that all enjoyment spontaneously overflows into praise, unless sometimes even if shyness or the fear of boring others is deliberately brought into check it. The world rings with praise, lovers praising their mistresses, readers their favorite poet, walkers praising the countryside, players praising their favorite game. Praise of weather, wines, dishes, actors, motors, horses, colleges, countries, historical personages, children, flowers, mountains, rare stamps, rare beetles, even sometimes politicians and scholars. And then skipping down a little, he writes this, I had not noticed either that just as men spontaneously praise whatever they value, so they spontaneously urge us to join them in praising it. Isn't she lovely? Wasn't it glorious? Don't you think it that magnificent? The psalmists, in telling everyone to praise God, are doing what all men do when they speak of what they care about. My whole more general difficulty about the praise of God depended on my absurdly denying to us as regards the supremely valuable what we delight to do. What indeed we can't help doing with everything else. I think we delight to praise what we enjoy because the praise not merely expresses but completes the enjoyment. It is appointed consummation. All right, is that pretty deep or what? Here's what he's saying. C.S. Lewis is saying, if you really love something, if I were to go watch a movie or something like that, and I was like, man, that was the best movie on earth, would I come back and talk to you guys and be like, hey, how was that movie? It was all right. No, I'd be like, man, it's the best movie ever. Why? Because what C.S. Lewis is saying is your joy in that movie isn't complete. It's not consummated until you express it verbally. Does that make sense? Your joy in someone or something that you value is not completed until you verbally express it around and with other people and towards God. Now he goes on and he says this. I like this part. This is even better. Now he says, the worthier the object, the more intense this delight would be. If it were possible for a created soul fully, I mean up to a full measure, conceivable in a finite being to appreciate, that is to love and delight, in the worthiest object of all, which is God, and simultaneously at every moment to give this delight perfect expression, then that soul would be in supreme beatitude or joy. It is along these lines that I find it easiest to understand the Christian doctrine that heaven is a state in which angels now and men hereafter are perpetually employed in praising God. This does not mean, as it is dismally suggested, that it is like being in church forever. All right, and then he goes on and he says, to see what the doctrine really means, we must suppose ourselves to be in perfect love with God, drunk with, drowned in, dissolved by that delight which, far from remaining pent up within ourselves, is incommunicable, hence hardly tolerable, bliss, flows out from us incessantly, again, an effortless and perfect expression, our joy no more separable from the praise in which it liberates and utters itself than the brightness a mirror receives is separable from the brightness it sheds. And then the fulfillment of what he's trying to get at goes like this. Fully to enjoy is to glorify. In commanding us to glorify him, God is inviting us to enjoy him. All right? So when you look at a book like the Psalms, why does God develop the longest book in the Bible? He devotes it to praising him. What C.S. Lewis says is that is the greatest gift that God could give you. In expressing your love and your joy in God is the greatest joy you could ever experience because God is the greatest treasure. This, again, it becomes not only does it become paramount when I'm struggling with things, but it becomes paramount in my rejoicing in God. And when I'm experiencing joy in my life, do I see that as a way to worship and reflect the glory of God? Do I see it as a way to pour out praise? Every blessing I receive from God, I pour it out as praise. And the more I pour out praise, the more I receive his joy, and the more I enjoy him. But remember, as he says, in order for this to be understood, you have to imagine that you are flat out in love with God. And that's what you find in the Psalms. You find people who are flat out in love with God. If you aren't in love with God, the Psalms are going to sound really stupid to you. And that's why for so long, I could honestly say that my relationship with the Psalms was so weak. It's because I wasn't flat out in love with God. I had an intellectual knowledge of who God was, but I wasn't in love with him. I hadn't had a personalized, beautiful, intimate, passionate relationship with God. But the more I develop that, the more he develops it in me, should I say, the more I experience this joy as I pour through the Psalms, and it's become a very valuable and important book to me.